Yo, what is up YouTube? It's your boy T-Hatch coming back at you with another video. Today, as you can see in the title, we are going to be talking about the NBA Finals Game 4 and recapping this Lakers win for you, breaking down what the Lakers were able to do to get a win in Game 4 as they were unable to do in Game 3. So I'm going to jump right into it here, analyzing this game. The first thing that I want to look at is the performance from LeBron James, obviously the leader of this Lakers team. And LeBron once again gave you the pretty typical LeBron Finals performance, which is a near 30-point triple-double, finishing with 28 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists. That's basically a 30-point triple-double right there. Which is about what you got out of LeBron in the last game. Big difference here being that Anthony Davis at least stepped up and was not largely below his typical performance as he was in Game 3. Anthony Davis, while not dominant on the offensive end, he was definitely dominant on the defensive end, getting a steal and 4 blocks while only fouling twice. That's, to me, the significant part there, is only getting 2 personal fouls throughout that entire game. Davis was a big defensive presence through that entire game for the Lakers, and it made a huge difference on the game, which I will explain more later. Davis finished on the offensive end with 22 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 assists, which, while not terrible, that's not a great game for Anthony Davis. That's a pretty average game for Anthony Davis. But like I said, on the defensive end, he was absolutely stellar, and that was the big difference by having Anthony Davis on the floor for the majority of this game, unlike in Game 3, where he sat out with quite a lot of foul trouble and really put the Lakers in a tough position on the defensive end of the floor, where they just had no answer for Jimmy Butler. Not necessarily the case here in Game 4. Now, for the Lakers' supporting cast, I think it was a pretty even-handed, good game, not a great game by any of these guys, but they all played well, which is all you need them to do. Caldwell Pope had 15 points, 3 rebounds, and 5 assists. I think that is a great game for Caldwell Pope. Danny Green had 10 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. You'd be happy with that out of Danny Green if you were any team. Kyle Kuzma, 9 points, 2 rebounds. Not excellent, but not terrible either. Markieff Morris, not his twin brother, had 9 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists, which, hey, if I'm getting that out of Markieff Morris on a nightly basis, I'd be pretty happy with that. So moving on from that, I really think that this Game 4 was won on the defensive end for the Lakers, and I'm going to talk about the Heat here in a moment, but focusing in on the Lakers, I really think that their defensive effort was the difference between Game 4 and Game 3. Obviously, having Anthony Davis on the floor for this Lakers team makes a huge difference on their defense. He's a guy who can guard all 5 positions on the floor and do so at an excellent level. So when you're missing that for large chunks of the game, it's really, really tough to get a rhythm defensively, figure out exactly where your guys need to be and where the strength of your defense is. Because typically, if you have somebody that's being a little bit of a problem, if you can push them toward Anthony Davis in the middle, or if you even have to bring Anthony Davis out to meet them at the perimeter, you have a way to deal with it. You have that piece on your defense that you can say, if we just get him to an Anthony Davis contest, he's probably going to miss this shot more often than not. That's a huge thing to have on the floor for you. So they were missing that in Game 3, had him in Game 4. But a huge thing for the Lakers was how they adjusted their coverages on Jimmy Butler. I'm going to talk about the game that he had in a moment here. But overall, for Jimmy Butler, it was not necessarily a stellar game like he had had previously, and I think personally that that is because of the adjustments of that Lakers defense. Forgive me for taking the time to pull that up real time here. Butler finished with 22 points, 10 rebounds, and 9 assists. I thought I grabbed those stats earlier, but apparently not. But that is not stellar for Jimmy Butler. That is below his averages for this series, even before you considered that outlier in Game 3. So, looking at that performance, it's not a terrible performance by any means, but it's not excellent. And of course, what we have seen in this series is that Jimmy Butler has to be absolutely excellent for this Heat team to win, especially when you consider some of the struggles that Bam Adebayo had in his return, which again, I'm going to talk about a little bit more later. But what did the Lakers do to get Jimmy Butler off of his game? They changed their defensive strategy for handling Jimmy Butler, and it definitely worked. What they did is they put LeBron on Butler and often only left Markieff Morris on the same side as LeBron and Butler. So that is a huge adjustment right there, because it means whoever's going to come over and set that screen for Jimmy Butler is being defended by Markieff Morris. I keep doing that. Defended by Markieff Morris. So even if you get that switch from LeBron to Morris, it's not a huge difference when it comes to Jimmy Butler attacking that player. Now, if you had a perimeter player, let's say it was Goran Dragic, if he was healthy for this Heat team, being switched onto Markieff Morris would actually be a good situation for Goran Dragic, where he could take advantage of that mismatch, use his quickness and his ball handling to create a shot or a scoring opportunity on the perimeter. Whereas with Jimmy Butler, he's not necessarily that perimeter scorer like a Goran Dragic is, or like even a Tyler Hero. Jimmy Butler has to do a little bit more work on the mid-range, on the inside. That's where he likes to operate, and that's a tough matchup when you're now getting matched up from a player who was already bigger and stronger than you to a guy who is bigger and stronger than you. And, you know, it's not to say that that advantage is a significant strength advantage for Morris over Butler, but that little advantage that's still there, even when you switch from LeBron to Morris, is big. You know, against guys like Caldwell Pope that he was getting switched onto, he can take advantage of him easily because he just has such a overwhelming strength advantage. When he gets switched onto a guy like Kyle Kuzma, he can take advantage of him because of Kuzma's lack of experience, his lack of physicality as a guy who's still in some ways growing into his body, although he is a little bit older, being a guy who played, I believe, all 4 years in college prior to coming to the NBA. But he's not a polished defender. He's not going to be able to hold up against Jimmy Butler in the paint or in the mid-range, so he can take advantage of those matchups. The one that was giving him trouble was Morris. And of course, obviously, if LeBron or Anthony Davis is guarding you, that's a whole different discussion from all these role players. But that was causing a lot of problems for Jimmy Butler on the night, because what you saw in Game 3 was a very simple bring a pick over, get that switch, Jimmy Butler go down, post somebody up, and get a bucket. He'd either get that little fadeaway jump shot, or he'd get around him for an easy layup. Not the case in Game 4, because he was going against Morris, going against LeBron, going against Davis. They never let Jimmy Butler have those easy matchups, and that was the huge difference. Now, another thing that we saw the Lakers do to adjust and help stop Jimmy Butler was make sure that toward the end of the game, coming down the stretch, one, that LeBron was always in the game when Jimmy Butler was in the game. That was a key point of the Lakers' game plan as I watched the game. And in addition to that, coming down the stretch, LeBron stopped switching off of Jimmy Butler unless it was absolutely necessary, obviously to keep LeBron a better defender on Jimmy Butler, a guy who is a good matchup for Jimmy Butler, and keep him from scoring. What we also saw is coming down the stretch in those key possessions, we saw some possessions with Anthony Davis guarding Jimmy Butler. just showing his true versatility. Not only is he a shot blocking center who can protect your rim, he's a guy who can defend on the perimeter. He's a guy who can defend in the mid range. He's a guy who clearly is not going to get backed down by Jimmy Butler and let Jimmy Butler score a bucket in the paint. So I think that was a good adjustment as well, especially considering that this Lakers team does have the size to put around Anthony Davis, where you can play Davis on the perimeter and not have to worry as much about the rim. So I think that was a smart choice by the Lakers, and it paid off for them getting the win. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Miami Heat and some of the things that I think went well for them, some of the things that are good signs for them, and some of the things that I think did not go well for them. One of the things that did not go well was Bam Adebayo's return. I think he really struggled in his first game back from this injury. He had 15 points, 7 rebounds, and 1 assist, but he had 3 turnovers, he had 4 fouls, and to me, the biggest part of this that was not good for Bam Adebayo was those 4 fouls, because it really kept Bam Adebayo off the floor, much like you saw with Davis in Game 3, where he just was not able to be on the court long enough to display that defensive impact on the game and have that truly affect the outcome of the game, truly affect the scoreboard of that game. Because if you have Bam Adebayo in there making these great defensive plays every now and then, you know, it's really nice. But the thing that really helps is when you add up those consistent stops over the course of a game, they start to add up to a big advantage. When you can't have Bam Adebayo on the floor getting those stop after stop after stop, it doesn't have that cumulative effect on the game, and it starts to nullify the effect of a great player like Bam Adebayo. Now, as far as his offensive performance goes, I think he displayed a great level of skill. I think he was the guy that he was prior to this injury, so I don't think anything was missing there. I don't think there was a bunch of rust he was shaking off. He just simply didn't have the minutes on the floor because of that foul trouble. I think if he stays out of foul trouble in Game 5, he's going to be able to score more points. He's going to get more rebounds, more assists. He'll do more of everything. What we saw from Bam Adebayo, I was really impressed with what I saw. I saw a lot of great defensive plays. I saw the most dynamic defender on this Miami Heat team by far, and that's even on a team with Jimmy Butler. Because Bam Adebayo was able to take assignments all the way from Anthony Davis to LeBron James and hold his own. He's got the strength, the size, the quickness to stay with both Davis and James, which is huge. Having that guy who's able to switch onto either of these Lakers stars and put together a good defensive possession, even if he's left on them one-on-one, is massive for Miami, because then obviously that means if you've got one of these guys that you can play one-on-one, well, now we can start thinking about sending double teams at this other guy without having to be too worried about getting torched by the other one. So that's pretty significant for Miami, but he just needs to stay on the floor. And I think it would help a ton as well on the offensive end, because Bam Adebayo would take a lot of that offensive pressure off of Jimmy Butler. A lot of what the Heat did in the regular season and up through the playoffs was running a dribble handoff attack with Bam Adebayo, as well as getting Bam Adebayo opportunities to attack off the dribble and create plays from those situations. Obviously, all of that entails Bam Adebayo having the ball and not Jimmy Butler. That opens up Jimmy Butler for more off-ball movement, more rest on the offensive end, and more opportunities where he can get single coverage matched up on a guy he likes in a situation he likes, versus having to get marked all the way in the backcourt, having to find creative ways just to get the ball with a chance to attack, then having to try and find a good switch to then try and take advantage of that mismatch. You know, that's a lot that you have to get into. That takes up a lot of time, that takes up a lot of energy from Jimmy Butler, whereas all of that can be circumvented by giving Bam Adebayo a lot more of those playmaking responsibilities, and that's only going to help open up Butler for more opportunities on the offensive end. So really, that is the key going into Game 5 for Bam Adebayo, is stay on the floor. No fouls, only if it's absolutely necessary. Now, moving on from Bam Adebayo, I want to talk about Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson, two guys that I predicted would get their shooting percentage up above league average as they were below league average in game three, even in that win. And they did just that. As expected, Hero shot 43% from three as Duncan Robinson shot 50% from three. Hero scored 21 points. Robinson got 17. And in my opinion, that is all you can ask out of these guys, especially when they're shooting on such good efficiency. If I'm getting 21 points and 17 points out of Hero and Robinson, yeah, I'm really, really happy, especially considering they're shooting basically 50% from three, doing most of their damage from three. Those are two prolific guys that you have on the floor. And the thing for me that if you're a Miami fan would hurt is Robinson and Hero had as good of a game as you can ask for out of them, and the Heat still lost. The Heat absolutely need to capitalize on good shooting nights like this for Hero and Robinson if they want a chance to win this series. This is what keeps the Miami Heat in a game like this where Jimmy Butler's not getting it done and Bam Adebayo is off the floor quite often with foul trouble. You're missing your two biggest offensive engines. You weren't missing Butler, but you get what I mean there. When you're getting this offensive contribution out of Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson on the same night, you've got to have Jimmy Butler step up just a little bit more. You've got to have Bam Adebayo be able to control himself on the defensive end just enough to get enough minutes on the floor to make that difference and win that game. So for the Heat fans, you know, that's got to be a tough pill to swallow, watching your two shooters go off and not be able to capitalize. Something else I want to follow up on from my analysis from Game 3 was Kelly Olynyk coming back to earth, and this is just what I expected out of him. He only got 4 points and 2 rebounds, kind of returning to the Kelly Olynyk that we know him to be, and that's no shot at Kelly Olynyk. He's been a good role player for his entire career and will continue to be that. He should be extremely happy with his performance in Game 3, and obviously he's going to want to come out and do better than he did in Game 4 coming into Game 5, but he should not be upset with himself. He should go home even if the Heat end up losing this series eventually. Kelly Olynyk should remember this finals moment for the rest of his life as one of the highlights of his basketball career because he did something absolutely amazing and unexpected in the NBA Finals in Game 3. That said, I think we're going to see more performances like Game 4 out of Kelly Olynyk, where he's going to be getting 4, 6, 8 points, you know, 2 to 4 rebounds, maybe an assist. That's about what you can expect out of Kelly Olynyk. Now, what I do want to say for Miami is that I actually think they should be encouraged by Game 4 despite losing the game. They were in this game the entire way through. It was a very close basketball game. It never felt like the Lakers were in control of this game until you got really under a minute and a half left, where the Lakers just had, at that point, an insurmountable lead for the time remaining. But it never felt like a dominant game for the Lakers. Even though Anthony Davis did not play bad, he did not play great on the offensive end. And if the Lakers are going to dominate you, Anthony Davis has to be dominant, and he wasn't. So will that happen again in Game 5? Who knows at this point? You know, Anthony Davis has really given us the full spectrum of being the absolute dominant force that we know he can be, and also in Game 3 showing us that sometimes Anthony Davis can kind of disappear. The comparison I came up with the other day was that Anthony Davis is kind of like a reverse Jamal Murray, or at least the Jamal Murray we knew before the bubble, where every now and then Jamal Murray can just go nuclear and have 40 points in a game, shoot an amazing percentage, but most of the time he's just going to get you in the teens. Anthony Davis is kind of the opposite. Most of the time he's going to go nuclear, he's going to destroy the other team's defense, but every now and then there's a game where you're just like, what happened to Anthony Davis? Is this his brother who has no basketball talent out there? Like, what's going on? You know, he just has a tendency to sometimes disappear. Is he going to disappear again in the finals? We'll see. Is he going to have one of those dominant games again in the finals? We'll see. You can get anywhere on that spectrum from Anthony Davis, and that is either a great thing or a terrible thing for the Lakers or for the Heat. We'll see. He's a wild card, that's for sure. But the Heat should be very encouraged by what they saw in Game 4, because they saw if they follow their game plan, they can get Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero good shots. If they follow their game plan, they will have a good game from Bam Adebayo. If they follow their game plan, even though Butler was not stellar, he was still good. So if they follow their game plan, they can do things right. And what that shows them is that if Butler and Bam can absolutely bring it, the Heat can win any of the games in this series. This is still a competitive series. It is a 3-1 advantage for the Lakers. But let's not forget, if Miami comes out and wins Game 5, it's going to be 3-2. And then all of a sudden, it's a 2-1 series. And it's going to be really tight for those remaining three games. So Miami, obviously, they have their backs up against the wall. They have to get a win here in Game 5. But they should be encouraged with what they saw in Game 4 to know that if they absolutely bring it, it is possible to get a victory against this Lakers team. So that really covers all the thoughts that I have for Game 4 of the NBA Finals here in 2020. The bubble has been amazing. It is so nice to have basketball back, to be witnessing the NBA Finals, which we did not know for sure was going to happen this year. So happy about it. And I'm so happy that you tuned into the video and watched all the way to the end. As always, if you enjoy the show and want to help this channel grow, the absolutely best way to do so is to simply share this with your friends. So go ahead and leave a like, comment down below, and definitely subscribe to the channel, because it helps out a ton. All that out the way, I appreciate you listening, watching, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Peace.